Well, if you've got your Bibles, if you'd like to turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, we're going to read from there in a couple of minutes. And as Holly indicated in her prayer, we've been going through a really challenging and wide-ranging series on authority and submission, and we've called it Power Trip. And I know for myself, I've been so challenged just in my day-to-day life about how I both submit to authority and how I exercise authority in all the different places that that happens in my life. And if you think about life, it happens a lot. We are always under some authority. And in certain situations, we also wield authority. How we do that the way the Bible says is really life-giving, liberating, and good for everybody, but it challenges all of our assumptions about what it means to relate to others and what it is that our hearts drive us toward. I want to just put a few names up on the screens. And if you know your Bibles well, you'll probably recognize these names, and they might bring back to you the stories that they're involved in. Moses, Nathan the prophet, the prophet Elijah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel, and John the Baptist. Now, just a bit of a sampling of some Bible characters. I wonder if you can spot what all of those characters have in common. Have a little think for a while. Yes, they're in the Bible. We know that. That's one thing they've got in common. But there's something about their stories that is really similar. Here's what it is, among other things. They all stood up to people in authority. They all stood up to people in authority who were doing the wrong thing, and they made a stand for what was right. They made a stand for God in that situation. Moses does it by commanding Pharaoh, "Let my people go." Nathan does it after King David had committed adultery and then murder by tactfully but very forcefully coming and confronting David about his sin. Elijah does it after Queen Jezebel has put most of the prophets of the true God to death. He confronts those prophets and challenges them to a showdown and turns the tables in defiance of Queen Jezebel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego do it by refusing to bow down to an idol in the image of King Nebuchadnezzar. When all of the nobles, all of the significant people in the empire had been gathered together to worship this idol, they stood up and would not bow down to any idol. They determined in their hearts to worship only God. Daniel, he did it by continuing to pray after King Darius had said, "No, you can't pray to anyone else but me for 30 days. And John the Baptist, he rebuked King Herod publicly for breaking God's laws in marrying his brother's wife. All of these people in different ways, they stood up against authority. Now with that in mind, let's read from 1 Peter chapter 2. And if you or somebody next to you has a Bible, follow along, or you can just listen to me as I read it. 1 Peter chapter 2 from verses 13 to 25. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free men, but don't use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, honor the king. Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. I'm going to flick now to Romans chapter 13, which is a parallel passage. And as we'll see as we go through our text today, they have five principles in common that are really important for us to see. Romans chapter 13 from verses 1 to 7. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities. For there's no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. So consequently, He who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear from the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he'll commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. This is why you also pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honour, then honour. Those are the two classic passages in the New Testament that talk about our attitude, our posture toward those in authority. But how does that marry up with these examples that we looked at earlier of people who defied authority, who stood against authority, and who seem to be doing the opposite of what we are commanded to do in these passages? Actually, it all ties together and makes perfect sense. And part of the journey of following Jesus is learning to discern how to apply these principles in the many different kinds of situations that you find yourselves in. And so we're going to explore five principles that help us to get what the Bible is saying when it comes to how we relate to those who are in authority over us and how we are meant to behave when we are in authority over others. Whether that's in our workplace, whether it's in an educational institution, whether that's in a government institution, wherever it is that authority is being exercised, even in our sporting teams, there's always going to be some measure of authority from a captain or a coach or a club chairperson or whatever it might be. Authority and submission is just happening all the time in life. So how do we do that according to these scriptures that we've looked at today? Five basic principles, and we're going to rocket through them fairly quickly. This is the first one. Since God is sovereign over everything, submission to earthly authority is an expression of submission to God. This is just a key understanding that every Christian needs to have. Since God is sovereign over everything, submission to earthly authority is an expression of submission to God. If you claim that you can honor Christ as King, if you claim that you live with him as the Lord of your life, but you can't honor anybody else who is in authority over you, the chances are you're probably not very good at honoring Christ as an authority either. The two things go together. These are the scriptures that referred to that as we read them out. 1 Peter 2, right at the beginning, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake. For whose sake? For the Lord's sake. To every authority instituted among us, whether to the king as supreme authority or governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. Again, in Romans chapter 13, as it began, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. So consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. This is basic posture that we are meant to have toward authority, which says, I choose to submit myself to the authority that God has placed over me. That's a basic mindset, a basic attitude that we are meant to have as we go through life. So if you're in a classroom, it might be toward a teacher. If you're in a workplace, it might be toward the supervisor or the employer or whoever it is that's been placed over you in that situation. If you're in a sporting team, it might be to the captain or the coach. There's this basic posture that Christians are meant to have toward authority that says, you know what? I'm not here to work against you. I'm not here to rebel. I'm not here to demand my own way. I'm not here to make your life difficult. I'm actually a part of a team here. Whether that team is a nation, whether it's a classroom, whether it's a sporting team, I'm willing to play my role under your authority. That's the basic attitude that a Christian is meant to have. And we know that human nature says, no, I'd rather be in charge myself. I would rather get my own way. I don't want to submit to somebody else's will. But what Christians are called to do is to recognize that when God has placed you in a position of being under somebody's authority, be under it. Don't fight it. Have a posture of wanting to support them. You know, my experience in workplaces over the years, I've worked alongside all kinds of people who've had problems with their managers and those over them, but sometimes there are particular issues people have, and we need to be really honest about that. I've been in situations where men have had a whole world of trouble submitting to women because they have a particular mindset that men should be in charge. And in that posture, in that situation, they've had a real problem when they're under the authority of women, say, hang on, this isn't right, this doesn't feel good, because they've come from maybe a more traditional background where that should never happen. Not okay, according to the Bible. I've been in situations where people have had trouble submitting to people of different ethnic backgrounds. Like, hang on, this is my country and no one should tell me what to do. As though they had an entitlement to be in charge because their family tree has extended back further in Australia than somebody else's might have. Not okay. I've seen people who are older have enormous trouble submitting to those who are younger. Don't you hate it when somebody else gets promoted above you and you've been there longer and it's, oh, not fair. I've seen older people really struggle to submit to somebody who is younger and less experienced. By the same token, I've seen people who are younger have a world of trouble submitting to those who are older. It's like, oh, you're just not with it anymore. You don't know what's going on. You're not up with the technology. And they have trouble submitting to those who do have more life experience, but maybe a little bit less time in front of screens. So there are all kinds of reasons that people have issues submitting to those who are placed over them. And for the Christian, none of them are okay. The Bible's really clear. When you're in a position under somebody else's authority, submit to it as you submit to the Lord. It's a basic posture that we are meant to have. Second thing that these passages teach about authority is this. Submission to earthly authority is good for our own consciences, our witness to the community, and our treatment from those with authority over us. That's a bit of a mouthful, but you've got to recognize that not only is your submission to authority something that God commands and desires for you, and it shows that you can submit to his lordship as well, it actually does good things for you. It does good things for others. So 2 Peter describes it like this. For it's God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free men and women, and children for that matter, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers. Fear God. Honor the King. And the way it says it in Romans 13 is like this. Therefore, it's necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. So there's three elements of why it's good for us to submit to authority. First of all, for our own conscience. You know, most of the time, when I don't want to do what somebody above me says I should do, it's because my own pride, my own rebellion, my own hatred of being told what to do and how to do it, my own thought that I know better than they do. It's unhealthy stuff going on the inside is the reason why the vast majority of the time I want to rebel against authority. And I know that deep down. And so I might argue about why I shouldn't have to do what I'm told to do or what the law says I should do, but deep down I know, hey, this is just ugly muck going on inside you. Pride, rebellion, desire to get your own way, not caring about others, all that kind of stuff. So when I submit to authority and be a team player and do what I'm asked to do and don't live according to what my sinful nature is driving me to do, it actually feels good. It feels good to know that I've made a choice to honour God and support others and not just do what I want. It's good for our own consciences when we do that. Secondly, it's good for our witness to the community. Because, and particularly in these early stages of Christianity, there was a lot of suspicion. What are these Christians on about? And a lot of people thought that they were subverting society, that there was some creepy cult that was going to mess everything up. But when Christians showed, hey, you know what, we can be good citizens. We can pay our taxes. We can obey the laws. We can support the institutions that make society work. You know, we can put our shoulder to the wheel the same way that everybody else is and do good in the community under the authority of whether it's civil government, whether it's the empire, whether it's, you know, family heads, whatever it might be. We can actually get on board with what we as a whole community are doing. It actually took away a lot of the fears, a lot of the sting of, hey, who are these people that are different from us? And it opened up the opportunity to really show what a Christian is like. We're not other. We're not separate from you. We don't have our own agenda. No, we're actually part of the community. We're part of your sporting club. We're part of your school. We're part of your workplace. And we're happy to be a part of what you are trying to do in those settings. And as those relationships are healthy and whole in that environment, we have opportunities to share the truth of what it is that we believe. It's also good for our treatment from those with authority over us. You know what? I have never had anyone grab my right foot while I've been driving, force it to the accelerator so that I would get a fine and have to pay it. Now, whenever I am punished by the government, it's usually because either I did something wrong, or maybe it might have been a misunderstanding about the road rules, or I didn't see a sign, whatever it might have been. But there's something that I have done that has deserved punishment. That's why I've been punished. And I could go back to my school days. Maybe we'll touch on that later on, but we might not. And I realised that, you know, teachers didn't always get it right. But the reality is the vast majority of times when I got in trouble from an employer, from a teacher, from the government, from the police, from whoever it might have been in authority, the vast majority of time that happened was because I was doing something wrong. So very practically, if you just do the right thing, if you do what the law says, if you do what your employer asks, if you do what the teacher required you to do and get your homework done on time, whatever it might be, when you submit to authority, they're not going to have to punish you. It's pretty obvious, but how often have you heard people complain about that stupid teacher or that demanding boss or the flipping money-making molten over machines? And we blame the authority for what we did to deserve the punishment. And for a Christian, you know, own it. You've got to own our own part. And when we submit the way that we're supposed to, for the most part, we're not going to cop bad treatment from those in authority over us. But this is where things turn a little bit. These two basic principles are true the vast majority of the time. The vast majority of the time. But they're not always true in every situation. And so these passages also contain some other information for us. Submission to earthly authority is not the same thing as unquestioning obedience. Peter describes it like this. For it's commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. And you might say, what on earth is going on here? It's talking about, in a modern sense, a workplace. And when you get treated badly by your employer because you've done the wrong thing, then how is that to your credit? And this is talking about slaves in the context of the first century. And so in that situation, it was quite acceptable for a master to beat a slave who had done the wrong thing. It's not many places. There are places around the world where that happens, sadly. But in most cases now, it might be that you lose your job or you get docked your pay or, you know, you have to do detention if you're in a school setting. There'll be some other way of punishing wrongdoing. And Peter's saying, how is it to your credit if you do the wrong thing and the person in authority punishes you for doing what you should not have done or not doing what you should have done? I mean, you're to blame for that. That's not a good situation at all. But if you're punished for doing good, that's commendable before God. What's that about? It's about the fact that sometimes people in authority might actually want you to do something that you know you should not do. And it's quite possible that people in authority might not want you to do things that you should do. We get under those pressures from time to time. For example, Daniel. Remember, the King Darius said, don't pray to anyone else but me for 30 days. Daniel says, well, no, I'm not going to submit to that particular command. As much as I'll submit in everything else, I won't submit to that one because that goes against what God's will is for me. And so he continued to pray. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego a little while earlier with a different king. Bow down. No, we're not going to. Submission to authority is not unquestioningly obeying everything that they tell you to do. It's explained really well in the New Testament in this story in Acts chapter 5. And the apostles have been arrested because the Jewish religious leaders had not enjoyed the message that they'd been spreading about the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus and their part in the story which was being described. And so the story unfolds like this. Having brought the apostles, they made them appear before the Sanhedrin, which is that ruling body in Judaism, to be questioned by the high priest. We gave you strict orders not to teach in this name, the name of Jesus, he said. Yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and are determined to make us guilty of this man's blood. Peter and the other apostles replied, and this is a principle I'd love for you just to take deep into your soul and to live by. We must obey God rather than men. Whether it's your peers, whether it's people who are in authority over you, this is a basic attitude of the Christian life. We need to obey God first. Not what I feel like doing, not what anyone else tells me to do or not do. God's will comes first. When we do good by obeying God rather than men, then God is at work to accomplish his good purposes. And so even if we get punished for that, even if people in authority, and there are places in the world where it could mean imprisonment or torture or losing your job or things like that if you stand up for Christianity. Here in Australia, it might be the fact that an employer says, you know what, we need to treat our customers like this in a deceitful way in order to get the sale. And you might say, well, no, as a Christian, I can't do that. And you might lose that job. But God notices that. It's never in vain. God's the one who's going to look after you in the midst of whatever that suffering is. He will get you through it and he will accomplish his good purposes through it. But most importantly, you will have honoured him and stood for what is right in the middle of that situation. So if you're ever playing on a, let's say it's a basketball team, and let's say I'm your coach, and I'm telling you to take out the opposition's best player, all right? Not going to happen, by the way, but let's just say that it does. If you're a follower of Jesus, what's your response going to be? Coach, I normally do what you tell me. Wouldn't that be nice? I normally do what you tell me, but I'm not going to do that. And what does that do? Your teammates might look at you and say, we need to win. It's the grand final, you idiot. Just do it once. But regardless of who might put pressure on you, say, no, I'm going to live for Jesus here. I'm going to put God first and do what he said. And as you do that, you're a witness to the truth of God in that situation. And there are times when you need to question what you're told to do. And you need to say, you know what? That doesn't fit with what God's will is, so I am not going to do that. Now, very closely related to that is our fourth principle. Because sometimes it's not just about us and what I do or don't do. Sometimes it's about other people and the situation that they're in that we need to come alongside. Submission to earthly authority is not the same thing as turning a blind eye to injustice. So just because our government says something, or just because people who are in authority in a particular institution or a particular family act in a certain way, doesn't mean that we should just stand aside and say, well, they're in charge. Now, sometimes we have to get involved in other people's circumstances for the sake of doing what is right. Nathan did that. Could have cost him his life. It cost John the Baptist his life. But both of these guys, when they saw people in authority doing the wrong thing, they spoke up. Now, in Nathan's case, he went to David and he confronted David about his adultery and about the murder that had been committed. And David might have gone, whoa, he knows about this and I need to cover my tracks. And he could have killed Nathan. But Nathan knew that he needed to step in, because David's sin wouldn't just affect David, it would affect the whole nation. He needed to get involved where he wasn't at the start, but by standing up for what was right, he needed to get involved. He needed to confront authority. The Apostle Paul does it in the New Testament. There's a story in Philippi where they'd been thrown in jail. Some amazing stuff happens while they're in jail, but we don't have time to talk about that today. But the story continues in Acts 16. When it was daylight, the magistrates sent their officers to the jailer with the order, release those men. The jailer told Paul, the magistrates have ordered that you and Silas be released. Now you can leave. Go in peace. But Paul said to the officers, they beat us publicly without a trial, even though we're Roman citizens, and threw us into prison. Now do they want to get rid of us quietly? No. Let them come themselves and escort us out. The officers reported this to the magistrates, and when they heard that Paul and Silas were Roman citizens, they were alarmed. They came to appease them and escorted them from the prison, requesting them to leave the city. And after Paul and Silas came out of the prison, they went to Lydia's house, where they met with the brothers and encouraged them. And then they left. What's going on there? It sounds, when you first read it, like Paul standing up for his rights and saying, you can't treat us this way. You're going to need to make up for the wrong things that you did. But the funny thing was, Paul wasn't shaking his fist and demanding his rights at the time when it was all happening to prevent it from happening. No, he actually endured that mistreatment. And then at the end says, now this isn't right. You can't treat people this way. And we're going to stand up for it. Why did he do that? He's just about to leave town. It's not going to have any effect on him. It's not going to change what happened. But I suspect the clue is right at the end there. After they came out of the prison, they went to Lydia's house where they met with those new Christians and encouraged them before they moved on. See, Paul and Silas knew that they might be leaving town. These other guys are staying. And if there are authorities in that city of Philippi who think they can just treat these Christians however they feel like treating them, the way that the mob might like them to be treated, then they're wrong. There's actually laws that govern behavior. And even magistrates are accountable to follow the laws of the nation. And Paul points out, hey, you people, you need to be more careful about how you treat these Christians, because you are accountable to the law just as we are. And so Paul is actually making a point here for the protection of those he's going to leave behind. He's standing up against injustice. And we've got to have that same attitude. You know, when we see things going on that aren't right, they may be illegal, or they may simply be immoral, or they may be damaging to others. We've got to be prepared not just to move on, oh, well, I'm not staying here anyway, I'm out of here. We need to be like Nathan and the Apostle Paul in this situation and so many other Christians through history. The people who stand up and say, you know what, we're not getting any personal benefit out of this, but there are some people who need us to stand up against authority. There are some people who are voiceless. There are some people who don't have the strength in them at the moment. And that could be happening in families. It could be happening in a school situation, a work situation. It could be happening in a country. There's all sorts of ways that people are being oppressed and abused. And as Christians, we don't get permission from the Bible to ever turn a blind eye to that stuff. In fact, our encouragement is stand up for the weak and oppressed. You know, if there's somebody who's being downtrodden, whether it's in a family situation and they don't have the bravery to seek help for that, you might be the person who comes alongside and walks with them through that. If there's some bullying going on in your workplace or in your school, you might be the person who comes alongside and helps out with that. You might be the one who helps them to navigate the legal system and to find the help that they need. You might be the person who lobbies Parliament to change unjust laws. Whatever it might look like, you could have a role to play for the sake of those who might not be able to do it for themselves. That's a really important part of our Christian calling. So all of those things apply to people under authority. First of all, yeah, we need to have a basic posture that says, I want to submit to authority. And the vast majority of the time, that's what we do, and it makes life better for everyone. But there might be some occasions, like when we ourselves are called to do something wrong or not do something right, or when others need our help, that we just have to stand up against authority. The last thing that these passages both talk about is this final issue, that when you are in authority, remember this, authority exists for the benefit of those under it, not the benefit of those who hold it. Now, most of us are going to be in charge of something sometime. And when you are, please remember this. Please remember that those that you lead don't exist to make your life easier. Your role is to help them flourish. Authority exists for the benefit of those under it. You know, we've been talking about a couple of different situations, the home and the church over recent weeks, and we'll finish off that next week. One of the reasons sometimes we fight against what the Bible is teaching in each of these situations, well, some of the reasons we fight against these general principles is because we don't fully grasp how beautiful this is. Authority exists for the benefit of those under it, not for the benefit of those who hold it. 2 Peter talks about it like this. Hopefully these verses are pretty familiar now. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. Romans, for rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Is it always the case? No. We've just talked about the fact that sometimes we have to stand up when it's not working out this way. But the majority of the time, that's what they're doing. Do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right. He'll commend you. He's God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He's God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. You know, we all appreciate the fact that in our country we can drive down roads and know that it's not bedlam. There's not going to be some hoon just doing 300 miles an hour and wiping you out. The reason that that's the case is because we have authorities who manage the way our society works. We appreciate the fact that we have access to education, access to healthcare, that we have good roads to drive on, that we have so many things in the way our country is organized that are a blessing and a help to us. We appreciate the fact that when we're struggling to find work, that there's ways that we can get supported in that period of time. Our authorities are working their butts off to look after us. Does that mean we agree with everything they do? No. Does that mean all of their systems are efficient and working really well and everyone is doing it for the right reasons? No. But on the whole, if you look at Australia and how it operates, you go, wow, we actually benefit from a lot of people who are doing a lot of work for the good of the citizens of this country. Let's be thankful for that, and let's make sure we're those kind of people. Let's make sure that whatever we do is for the benefit of those under our authority, not for ourselves. When you're in a position of authority, ask this question: how am I being God's servant for the good of those I lead? I've been really challenged as we've done this series, and we were talking a couple of weeks ago about what it looks like in home and in marriage. And I've been really convicted, you know, when I turn up at home, is it good for my family that I am the authority in my house? What's that looked like? It hasn't looked like barking a lot of orders. It's looked like poo patrol in the backyard. We have a dog. It's looked like making sure I take him for walks. It's looked like spending time with kids on homework. It's looked like doing the dishes a bit more than I was, cooking a bit more, doing some laundry. It's looked like, okay, how can I be an influence for good in my household? How can I take the initiative, not wait to be told, not wait to be nagged, whatever it might be, how can I take the initiative to make sure that life in our house is working well? And that's good for the people who live in my house. Am I capable of doing that on my own? No. Do I always make the right decisions? No. Do I need a lot of advice and help? Absolutely. But when I take the initiative to make sure life under my authority is good for those who are in that situation, then everything gets better for those who are in that position. It's not easy to do, though. When you're a boss, for example, and you report to shareholders or you report to a manager over you, sometimes the way you treat your team depends on how they make you look to your supervisor. And, you know, if they make you look good, then you're happy with them. If they're not doing their stuff on time and you're under pressure because the boss is talking to you, you can start getting really ratty with them. You know, it's very easy to start treating people under your authority as though they exist for your good. Hey, family, make my food. You know, do my dishes, wash my laundry, all that kind of stuff. No. It's the other way around. And Jesus described it like this. Jesus called them together, them being his disciples, and said, "You know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And this model of leadership works. It works in families, it works in the church, it works in business, it works in government. Wherever authority is exercised, when leaders lead like that, everyone gets better. The team gets better. Everyone is blessed as a result. And Jesus knew this. He wrote the book on the subject. So how do we exercise these five principles in our day-to-day lives? I want to leave you with five questions that you can apply in your own life as you head out to live for Jesus this week. The first principle: where do I have some opportunities to show joyful, willing submission to others in ways that show my devotion to Jesus instead of myself? I used to find this really challenging at school because, of course, when you're at school, it's cool to, you know, be a bit of a rebel. You know, I was that annoying little kid who would put stickers on the back of the teacher when he was helping the student in front and do all those kind of annoying things. But it's kind of cool to show that, hey, you know, I can be a prankster and I can do my own thing and I can talk when the teacher says not to talk. In actual fact, when I started taking this seriously is when my school life improved in terms of what my conduct was like. What is it like for me as a Christian to participate in a classroom or a workplace or a church or a family as somebody who actually loves to submit to authority, doesn't mind it, doesn't have a problem with it, likes to support those in authority in what they're trying to do, and isn't trying to make their life harder? That's a really good witness, as we've already spoken about. So where do you do that? Do you have a workplace? Are you in a family? Are you in a church? Do you submit to the laws of our country? Where are the people in authority over you? Do you play on a sporting team? Are you part of a community group? Are you showing in how you participate in each of those spaces that you're happy to submit to people over you, that you don't have to be in charge, that your opinion isn't always the most important, that you're happy to come in under somebody else and support them? All of us need to be doing that. Secondly, where have I been struggling to joyfully submit, and what has been the price of that? Have I got stuff going on in my conscience where I know I haven't been doing the right thing by my boss or by the government or by my teachers? And I might whinge and complain and blame them for it, but really I know what's been going on. Have you been struggling to submit in one of those areas? Is your witness compromised? Have you been struggling with consequences? You know, I often tell the story of why I didn't get the subject prize for computing science in year 12. Because it was a really important lesson in my life, and hopefully others have learned a bit from it as well. You know why I didn't get the subject prize for computing science in year 12? Nobody say it's because you weren't smart enough. That would be insulting, Luke. Because I topped all the assessments all year long. I was on a roll. I knew I was going to get that prize. What I didn't realize was on the last week of the semester, I'd been sent out for being an idiot in class. And I'd done all of the work for the last assignment, and it was on the computer ready for the teacher just to mark it off. And pretty much it didn't matter how I went in that. As long as I passed the thing, I was going to get the prize. It was no dramas. But I got a zero for it, because the teacher got everyone to bring that work off their computer onto a disc and put it on his desk. I wasn't in the room, and nobody told me about it. And so that last bit of work did not get marked. And when he read out the scores, and the guy who'd come second all year long came first for the subject prize, did he let me know about it? Sucked in! And it was so embarrassing. And I'm like, no, that can't be right. That's impossible. I'll just go sort this out. Went up to the teacher. Hey, there's been a mistake. Teacher goes, yeah, got zero for the last one. Oh, no, it's just here. It's on the computer. Didn't you have a look? It was, 2 meters away from your desk. No, sorry, you didn't hand it in. Who did I blame in that situation? Teacher, no, not fair. I did the work. It was awesome. No, if I hadn't been an idiot in class, I would have been there. That's the reality. And so where are there some places where you might be experiencing consequences? Are you willing to look at yourself instead of blaming others and go, you know what? I've got to own it. I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done this. I should have turned up when I was asked to. I should have completed that work by the deadline. I should have not driven at that speed. Whatever it might have looked like, let's not blame anyone else. Let's own what we need to own. Thirdly, where do I need to submit to Jesus by respectfully resisting earthly authority? And am I willing to pay the price? You know, are there, maybe it's coaches, maybe it's employers, maybe it's classmates, whoever it might be, are there people who are pressuring you to do what is wrong or who are getting in the way of you doing what is right? Are you able to very respectfully but very strongly say, this is what God calls me to do, or this is what God says I am not to do, and I will not bow to pressure on that? Hard thing to do, but so, so important. Are you willing to do that? And similarly, when you see those injustices going on, are you willing to not just walk on past, leave town, you know, just keep moving? Are you willing to actually get involved for the sake of those who need it? Because God calls us to do that. Who is it that stands up for the displaced, the poor, the unborn, the oppressed, the neglected, the voiceless? The answer is meant to be us. If we know about it, we've got a responsibility for it. And finally, where am I in a position of authority? And are those under my authority better off for it? Would I be willing to do an anonymous survey, like happens in so many businesses around the place? Find out from those who work under you. Find out from the members of your family. Find out from the kids that you coach on Wednesday night at basketball, whatever it might be. Do you feel like, you know, I'm making their lives better, not making their lives harder, not making it about me? It's a blessing to be under my authority. It's a humbling thing to think about, a very challenging thing. So there you go. The Bible's picture about authority and submission in the community, I think it's a pretty life-giving picture. I think it's a pretty great thing to aspire to. Is it natural? No. But is it good? I think so. So let's pray as we ask God to help us to do it. God, thank you that as the ultimate authority, you're the one who we look at and say, wow, we are so blessed to be under your authority. Because you have poured out your grace into our lives so richly, so abundantly. Lord, you are a good king. Lord, whenever we are in positions of authority, would you help us to learn from Jesus, who emptied himself, he didn't hold on to his position, but did everything that was needed in order to serve those he has authority over. Lord, would you help us to empty ourselves of all our pride, all of our sense of entitlement, all of our own sinful drives, all of our own personal ambitions. Would you help us when we're in authority to really love and really serve those who are under it? And God, when we are under the authority of others, would you help us to get over ourselves and be willing to submit? Would you help us to show that we love to submit not only to you, but to anyone who has that position of authority in our lives? But when we are called to stand against it, we also have the courage to do that too. And as we do these things, may Jesus be seen in all of it, and may you be glorified for your goodness. Amen. Thank you, team.